It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
In 2016, the Charlotte City Council revised its non-discrimination ordinance. It added protections for sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression. It also contained no exceptions for bathrooms or similar facilities. Almost immediately in response, the North Carolina legislature passed HB2 at breakneck speed. HB2 modified non-discrimination law to protect what they called biological sex, rather than just sex. It also preempted all local ordinances, including, of course, Charlotte's. Under HB2, biological sex is what's stated on your birth certificate. But transgender advocates argue that the term does not reflect the biological complexities of sex and gender. Even the latest repeal of HB2 leaves LGBT advocates unsatisfied. The state still retains the sole power to regulate bathrooms. Cities and local governments can't pass their own anti-discrimination laws until December 2020. Even though HB2 resulted in so much backlash, some states have proposed bathroom of one's birth laws. On one side, supporters of HB2 cite safety and privacy concerns. On the other hand, opponents of HB2 argue that fears of sexual predators are unfounded and just a thinly disguised veil for actual discrimination.
That's a report from CNN, just a recent report that kind of reminds us how much of this made the headlines. It started, I think, certainly North Carolina made the headlines with their passage of HB1, the HB1 bill, which was so controversial, in fact, cost North Carolina a ton of money. The NCAA is canceling their tournaments, other big organizations, because why? Because the legislators in North Carolina felt that people should go to bathrooms that comported with their biology, with their birth certificate. Who would have thought that that would be controversial? But that's not where it started. It actually, this isn't where it started either, but in the Obama administration, in the last few years, the Education Department mandated that education and school boards around the country accommodate transgender students with letting them go to the bathroom that they identify with, that comports with the gender they identify with, overnight trips, forcing school boards around the country. We've done tons of shows on this as people are saying, what are you talking about? And then tons of parents going to the school board and the school boards ignoring them and passing these outrageous orders that force children to share bathrooms with people of other genders and dressing rooms and changing rooms and overnight travel trips. But that's not where it ends. That's even not even where it begins. But when I think back to how this did start, I think of my next guest because Lori Higgins and I actually go back quite a long ways on this issue. I was on radio in Chicago for a long time, as you all know. And Chicago, of course, was on the front lines of lots of this. And it came to my attention that there was a teacher at Deerfield High School, a writing teacher, who was taking on her administration on issues of homosexuality, LGBT rights, all of it, courageously fighting in a very gracious but winsome way. And I reached out to Lori, and she didn't actually want to go public. I remember she was doing what she should have been doing, using her personality, her winsomeness, and her intellect to try to persuade on the inside. But it did not go well. Lori ended up being demoted to a basement office with no windows. She finally left, and she has become, I have to tell you, a powerhouse and a resource on this issue like almost no other. She has become the cultural affairs writer for the Illinois Family Association, which is an affiliate of the American Family Association. Lori writes prolifically on this issue, again, out of her own experience and out of her intellect. And I'm glad to have her join us this morning. Lori, thanks for joining me.
Well, thanks so much, and thank you for that gracious introduction.
Well, I mean it. I watched you blossom, Lori. You were very shy at first, and then at least on the air. And I'm just thankful for what God has done. And, you know, you are a person whose judgment I trust, and I want my listeners to know that. And that's because spiritually, you know, you have a lot of things right to your commitment to the Lord, and I think that gives discernment. Now, not every guest that I have is on the same page with me on that, but you and I are on that this issue. I want to ask you, when you were at Deerfield High School so long ago, and we started seeing all these outrageous promotions of homosexuality in brazen ways, did you see any signs of the aggressive move to mainstream transgenderism?
I didn't see it when I was there. I've been with Illinois Family Institute now for, this is 8 or 9 years, so I didn't see it then, but I've seen it for the past few years, and I've tried to warn people, particularly about, I know it sounds trivial, but the whole pronoun use issue, which, by the way, many schools are already mandating that staff and faculty use opposite sex pronouns when they're referring to gender dysphoric students. They're mandating this. In fact, it was a year ago, I contacted a high school in Wheaton, Illinois, which, as you and I know, Sandy, is a more conservative community. It's the home of Wheaton College. And at this high school, I asked the assistant principal if they required staff and faculty to use opposite sex pronouns. And he said, yes. And I said, you require it. And he said, yes. And then he said, why would any conscientious teacher want to harm children by not using opposite sex pronouns? And I said, well, you know, we have to have a discussion about what constitutes harm, because I say facilitating this fiction, this delusion, harms children. So, but they were not notifying any parents that this was going on, that they were requiring staff and faculty. And this is going to be going on at elementary schools, is going on at elementary, middle, and high schools already. And Christian teachers are acquiescing, which is a huge problem because they are bearing false witness.
In fact, Lori,
you and I both... Oh, go ahead.
No, I just was reflecting. The first time I heard about this nonsense, which it is nonsense, I do think sometimes we forget to just call it what it is. It is nonsense. And when you say opposite gender pronouns, you're talking about kids, a 10-year-old who, a girl who thinks she's a boy because she's a tomboy, and the teachers then suddenly address her as him, his, and again, and even in Massachusetts, the first time I heard about this in public school was out of Massachusetts, and they were assigning these kids a boy's name or a girl's name, depending on what gender they thought they were. And also, Lori, they added that they were not telling the parents, not informing the parents at all. So Susie could go to school and tell her teacher she thinks she's a boy, and the teacher would assign her a boy's name. She could go to the boy's bathroom. The students would have to address her by the boy's name, but the parents could not know. And that's what you're talking
right
about, isn't it?
President Obama's, it was the Dear Colleague letter that went out from the Department of Justice, and actually a similar letter went to HUD, and a similar letter went to, what was the other one? I can't remember the third one, but a bunch of departments did the same thing. They sent out letters saying either Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 or Title IX of the Education Amendments of 1972, when those federal legislation used the word sex, it actually included gender identity, which was absurd. It didn't. And in fact, Title IX specifically said schools could have separate restrooms and locker rooms for boys and girls. But when he sent the letter out, the Dear Colleague letter to schools, what a lot of people don't realize is it actually said in there, not only did they have to have access to opposite sex transgender students, supposedly transgender, to opposite sex restrooms and locker rooms, they also had to be, if they had a school-sponsored overnight trip, they had to be housed with, in hotels, with students who shared their gender identity. So a boy who wished he was a girl had to be with girls. And it said they didn't have to have a diagnosis of gender dysphoria. They didn't have to be undergoing any treatment. They didn't have to have parental permission. They just had to go to the school and tell the school that they identify as the opposite sex. Now, let's look at what's just come out, I think it was a week or so ago, it at least made the news, that Harvard, I think they call it their BLGT organization, came out with a statement that said that someone's gender identity can change day by day. So now, what is schools going to do with the gender-fluid student who comes to them and says, this week I identify as a boy, the next week I'm, you know, he might identify as a girl. And what are they going to do with those students? School administrators are not, for the most part, deep thinkers. They don't think about the logical outworking of an idea. And, you know, you mentioned Deerfield High School, where I used to work in Deerfield, Illinois, which is on the North Shore, an affluent community, a very well-respected public school. They started last December, I think it was. They now have a gender-neutral restroom that has two stalls. So people need to understand what this means. This is not just for gender dysphoric students, the boy who wishes he were a girl. This is any boy, any girl in the high school can share the same restroom.
Sorry, I'm just letting that soak in. Lori, yeah. And also we should explain that this is a range. Like, there are people who identify as transgender. I would say that this is, I know firsthand because of my own experience with friends, that this is a mental disorder that creates tremendous angst, but usually is finally diagnosed, and then you start them on this treatment of hormones, and then you gradually mutilate their bodies. You remove the women's breasts, or you do what you do with men to make them the other gender, and you'd give them hormone treatments, you take away their beards, all of this. We all know about it now. How could you not know? But then there are, as you mentioned, kids who just, they watch TV. They watch their favorite pop artist. They watch the recent awards where, what, the star of Beauty and the Beast got this, what, gender nonconforming award or something like that? Something like that. And they start saying, well, maybe they're suggestible. And they are suggested into thinking, well, maybe toying with the idea that maybe I'm not all female after all.
It's how the culture is defining these conditions that, as you mentioned previously, a girl who didn't like frilly things and liked sports, the culture would call her a tomboy. She might refer to herself and think of herself as a tomboy, but she never questioned whether she was female or whether she was a girl. So we're putting ideas in kids' minds very young. We're giving these kids puberty blockers to prevent secondary sex characteristics. And a lot of people will say, well, that's not very dangerous because the effects of those are reversible. The problem is, if you have prevented puberty, you also change their social experiences. So if a little girl doesn't go through puberty or a little boy doesn't go through puberty as a boy or a girl, then it changes their social experiences in those years. In addition, many people don't realize this, that there are hospitals. There is a Lurie Children's Hospital here in Chicago, which you're, I'm sure, well familiar with. It used to be called Children's Memorial. They have done double mastectomies on girls as young as 15 years old. So when we say that we pass laws that say children, minors, cannot access medical help to help them with their unwanted sexual orientation, they can access medical help to change their sex, which of course they can't do. It's absurd. Even the left knows that, which is why the name of the surgery has changed from, it's no longer sex change surgery. They call it gender confirmation surgery. Mm. But, you know, I wanted to address a couple of things that you alluded to in the introduction.
Lori, hold that thought. Hold that thought. And don't forget, because we have to take a commercial break. But when we come back, we're going to continue the discussion with Lori Higgins. And we are going to put links to her articles on our Facebook page so that you can read them. Again, Lori, she's a prolific writer, and she tracks this as well as anybody that I know. And it is something, if you have children, grandchildren, neighbors, children, anyone listening, this is going to affect all of us. And so I hope that you'll stay tuned. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Pro Protesters shouted outside as the lieutenant governor fulfilled his promise inside.
We know it's going to be a tough fight.
Thursday, Dan Patrick unveiled the Texas Privacy Act, a 12-page bill requiring people to use public restrooms of their biological sex, and a $1,000 fine for schools or government agencies that violate it.
Are we going to have bathroom police? No. What this is it allows an individual who feels uncomfortable to report that.
Opponents call it unnecessary and say it discriminates against transgender people. But Patrick has a majority of Texans on his side. A poll we conducted last fall shows 54% don't think transgender should be able to use the restroom with which they identify. And that makes it tricky for lawmakers. On the one hand, citizens support it, but 1,100 businesses, including many of the state's largest, do not.
Will this bill even make it to the floor of the House for a vote?
I don't know. The first indication that this isn't going to move very fast is the governor saying, well, let's talk about that for a little bit. And I think just the governor throwing a little bit of cold water on it may slow it down enough that everybody can get this sorted out before they actually have to cast a vote.
Republican State Representative Matt Shaheen is introducing an alternative on Friday, preventing cities and schools from passing their own laws, but his will not require people to use the bathroom of their biological sex.
We need to be focused on local issues like law enforcement, criminal justice, parks, recreation, those types of things, and leave the bathroom discussion to the nonprofits, to the business community. Let them work out those issues.
And that's the debate likely to define this legislative session. Jason Whiteley, Channel 8 News.
All right, that was a report from February in Texas. By the way, Sandy Rios in the morning back with you. Texas is now this week grappling with their own, whether they're going to keep SB 6 or not. And we will at some point talk about that in more depth. But all the states are facing this. The schools are facing it. The businesses are facing it. We've made some progress, meaning those of us who believe that it's just common sense that you go to the bathroom that comports with your gender. You don't stay overnight. Boys don't sleep with girls on high school trips because they think they're girls. It's just a nonsense. It's evil. It's wicked. And it is creating chaos in our culture. And so Lori Higgins has joined me. And Lori, of course, is the expert on this with Illinois Family Institute, our affiliate in Illinois. Again, if you just tuned in, Lori was a worked in a high school, a major high school in Chicago, when this the whole issue of LGBT rights became an issue, and she took a very strong stand and fought a very hard, long battle and did not prevail. In fact, I would say that things have just gotten worse in public schools. Since Donald Trump has been elected, one thing I need to point out, almost immediately he rescinded Barack Obama's order to public schools, forcing them to accommodate transgender students, but we still have the problem with various school boards and states trying to push this through because the American National Education Association and teachers, administrators are all about this. So, Lori, thanks for joining me again. And you were getting ready to make a few points in reference to something we said in the first segment.
Well, yeah, there's a number of important issues. One, it was in the introduction where someone brought up safety and that, you know, a lot of people who are objecting to these policies focus on the risk to women posed by predators. Well, there's a couple of things. That's a serious issue, and no one is accusing gender dysphoric men, particularly we're talking about, of being predators. What people are primarily suggesting is that predators, men who prey on women, will use these what I call co-ed restroom policies to more easily access their prey. All they have to do is say, I identify as a woman, to get access to the women's restroom. And in fact, a student from Northwestern University, which I hope to write about this week, just wrote a letter in the Daily Northwestern. He had gone in their student center women's restroom and used the restroom. He does not identify as a woman. He just wanted to experience this and write about it for the newspaper. And the whole thing was, you know, pro co-ed restrooms is what it was, and how sympathetic he was to gender dysphoric people having to go into the wrong, in what they perceive as the wrong restroom. But what I want to say is that parents need to stop overemphasizing the idea, and not just parents, but other people who oppose co-ed restrooms, the idea of predation, because in elementary school, that is not an issue. There's not a 6-year-old boy who at that stage in his life wishes he were a girl. He doesn't pose a risk to girls. There's another more fundamental issue, which is, does physical embodiment, objective, immutable biological sex, have any intrinsic meaning, particularly relative to modesty and privacy? Because that's what we're teaching our kids. We're teaching our kids with these co-ed bathroom policies that our sex doesn't matter. It's not relevant. We're also teaching all children that in order to be compassionate and inclusive, they must be willing to relinquish their privacy. Those are very dangerous, very destructive messages. And that's what we should be at least as much focusing on as the issue of safety.
You know, Lori, I think you were the one who sent a blog of a woman who's not a conservative. She would not share our views. She went to Disney World and was in the women's restroom line there and describes a very masculine Hispanic man going into the bathroom. I should let you tell the story.
Right. Well, it's a really interesting story because she identifies as progressive, and she had gone with her child, a young child, to Disneyland. I think she was in California. And she was waiting in a line with women, and it was a long line. It went outside, and there was a man in line, and he finally got access to the restroom. It was a Hispanic man, clearly dressed as a man, looked like a man, and he didn't even use the restroom. He just stood and leaned against the wall, and she said everyone was looking at each other, but nobody wanted to say anything. Everyone was afraid. She said there was a few mothers who actually left the line, and he just stood in the restroom watching women go into the stalls, come out of the stalls, and her perception, I'm sure it was correct, was that he felt the complete freedom to do this because he knew what the women knew, which is they can no longer say anything. You know, I think you mentioned in the introduction to this segment some woman saying something about what are we going to have bathroom police. Well, it's really interesting because the left always, you hear this all the time, oh, are we going to have genitalia police? Someone sit out there and check their genitalia. Well, I would say to them, well, what are you going to have? Gender dysphoria police? So how do we know that the man who's seeking access to the women's restroom actually identifies as a woman or is a predator pretending to identify as a woman to access that? How are you going to determine that? Every silly argument they have is easily refuted. And their actual, the whole trans ideology, which I say is leading to tranarchy, collapses in self-contradiction. For instance, well, the left supports sex selection abortion, right? So you have a couple and they desperately want a boy and they find out through the ultrasound that it's a girl and they're going to abort it. Well, the left would say, according to their ideology, how do you know that it's actually a girl? She might actually be a boy, but you won't know that until she's 3, 4, 12, 15 years old. And so it's a self-contradictory ideology and easily refuted, but people have to be willing to put in some work to understand these issues.
Lori, we've touched a little bit on the history of the schools on this, and I actually want to come back to that. But first, I want to make sure we go to the medical portion of this, because now this thing is moved with warp speed. I have to tell you, I'm shocked that this whole issue of transgenderism and mainstreaming it has accelerated to the point where already people are mute, don't want to talk about it, are afraid. Women are allowing men to go in bathrooms. I cannot believe we've come to this so quickly. But they, meaning the left, the strategists on this, have thought of everything. And, of course, they've gone to the medical societies to make their point as well. And you talk about what's called the trans-affirmative policy of the American Association of Pediatrics. Talk about that for a second.
Yeah, this is a really, really important story, and I hope it gets circulated. So it's the American Academy of Pediatrics, the AAP, the 66,000-member American Academy of Pediatrics. All of your listeners, their children's pediatricians, I'm sure are members of this. Well, they have a trans-affirmative policy, which means they just affirm all the leftist ideas about, you know, it's a good thing to affirm kids in their gender dysphoria, even though the best research shows that unless parents are affirming this, it's upwards of 80% of children who experience gender dysphoria as young children will outgrow it unless it's affirmed. And now we're not only parents affirming it at home, but they're making the teachers at school do it. the pediatricians are, as we talked about, you know, administering puberty blockers, then starting in the middle of high school, cross-sex hormones, which, by the way, the effects, some of those effects are reversible. But so there's another conservative organization called the American College of Pediatricians. Excuse me. And they do not affirm these trans protocols for children. And anytime you refer to the more conservative organization, the left will say, oh, they're small and they're radical and they're Christians. And well, they were actually members of the AAP and they didn't like the politicization of the AAP, and that's why they split up. But I started to do some research into how this policy, this trans-affirmative policy of the AAP, developed and discovered that it's actually, there is a committee of seven people who formulated this policy. Two of the seven are homosexual themselves. I think perhaps a third, but I couldn't confirm that. So in my article, I just wrote about the two. And another third, who views herself as a social activist, she has an adult homosexual son who is raising children. So they formulated the policy. Then it's voted on by this board of directors, who are another 10 people. This policy never goes to the 66,000 members for a vote. There is no minority report filed. In fact, many of the members of the AAP don't even hear about this policy until there was a press release. So this is really 20 people who have an agenda, have established this policy for the entire AAP. So I would encourage your listeners, anytime they hear in discussions at their school board meetings or in the press, they hear about the AAP, how the AAP affirms this, they should correct them and say, no, that we know of, there's about 20 people in the AAP who created and voted for this policy. I'm sure there are other members of the AAP who affirm that, but we have no idea what the numbers are.
Well, and Lori, to prove your point, because your point really is that this is politicized. It's not based on objective scientific information. It is an agenda-driven professional organization allegedly representing pediatricians nationwide. And to prove that, you report in this article that they are partnering now with the largest pro-LGBT organization, best funded. I debated them many times on television, and that's the Human Rights Campaign. And the Human Rights Campaign is rabid in their they are going full bore on this transgender issue. Can you talk about that for a second?
Yes, the AAP is partnering with the Human Rights Campaign, which is our nation's largest, most well-funded pro-homosexuality, pro-transgender activist organization. And to know what, you know, to get a sense if people don't know what the HRC is doing regarding schools, here's just a couple. They're encouraging even students who are gender binary and use gender neutral pronouns. They're encouraging schools to require faculty members to do that. They're encouraging the whole protocol that Barack Obama tried to impose on schools illegally, I might add, but the whole restroom, locker room, overnight trip. And they have a guide that you can access to read everything the Human Rights Campaign is saying. And they're partnering with the AAP, which means the AAP is no longer formally, even though there's many pediatricians who are conservative and don't buy into this, formally, the AAP is not a neutral, objective, science-based organization. There is no evidence. In fact, I was just reading an article this morning. There's even some liberal organizations, at least within the last, since 2012, at least as recently as 2012, were saying there is no evidence that taking cross-sex hormones or certainly the surgery actually helps minors as they move through life. So, I should mention this. There's a huge growing, detransitioning movement, which people need to go on YouTube and read about this because it's very interesting. I've written an article about it and included some of the YouTube videos. The people who are detransitioning are not liberal. They can't dismiss this as a conservative Christian movement. They're actually very liberal. One of the women said, who is 22 years old, she stopped the cross-sex hormones, but she had a double mastectomy at 20 years old. And she said, and now I'm left with a broken voice and a scarred chest, because that's one of the permanent effects if you have to take cross-sex hormones is your voice does not return to normal. So this is what we're doing, and schools are facilitating this. And I ask the question, are you going to help be held culpable when these children grow up and some of them are going to deeply regret what's been done to them?
It is almost, it's beyond, it's, I can't believe we're talking about it. And here we are. We used to have to apologize, Lori. We talk about these things on the air. Now we have to talk about them because it's becoming right. The norm of our lives. Our kids are dealing with this. Our pastors need to know about this. Our parents, aunts and uncles, grandparents need to know about this so we know how to be smart and how to fight it. By the way, Lori's article on AAP, we'll put on our Facebook page, we'll put that one and others too, but so that you can have it to share. And when we come back, Lori, let's go back to the schools, because I lay it at National Education Association and the public schools as to much of what's happened to our culture. And perhaps we can go into that and flesh it out a little bit more. This is Sandy Rios. My guest is Lori Higgins with the Illinois Family Institute. We'll be right back after this.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Well, just this week, Chris Woodward did a report on American Family Radio News about Target. Of course, Target has been central in terms of the businesses, in terms of certainly the eye of the needle for us, in terms of opening up their bathroom and changing facilities to all genders. And there have been all kinds of reports of really abuse in the bathrooms of men going in and taking pictures of women dressing. It's really been a disaster. Target's market has fallen. Their shares have fallen, but it hasn't changed anything, it seems. Chris Woodward did this report, and I'd like for you to listen to it. Here it is.
T-shirts and other items with words like love, equality, and pride are nothing new at Target, but Target is again using a Take Pride hashtag on social media to promote its rainbow-themed merchandise. Peter Sprigg of the Family Research Council.
I would think Target would have learned their lesson about participating in aggressive LGBT activism from the backlash they received from their open bathroom policy last year, yet they seem not to have learned that lesson. They don't seem to understand that those people who have signed up to boycott Target are not going to be any happier with the Take Pride merchandise that they're offering.
The American Family Association is among the organizations boycotting Target over the bathroom and changing room policy. AFA says it is not about transgender people, rather perverts taking advantage of the policy and preying on women and children. AFA's Walker Wildman just recently announced 1.5 million signatures for the petition.
They are more focused on politics and shaping a social agenda than they are selling products.
Robert Kuykendall of Second Vote has been tracking Target's activities and promotions. Second Vote actually has a Target database on its website.
Target is a corporate sponsor of the Human Rights Campaign. Target also sponsors the National Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce and is a corporate partner for GLAAD. All these organizations that are really the advocacy arms of the liberal LGBT movement.
I'm Chris Woodward.
All right, so if you haven't joined that petition with us, 1.5 million signatures, I'm off of Target. I haven't shopped there in a long time. I thought for sure they would come around, but no, they're just digging in their heels. So won't you join us? Come and join us, afr.net, sign up and help us to make our voices heard, because that's the only way really we can fight back in terms of just the marketplace. Well, where did this all start? I have to tell you, I've been tracking the issue of LGBT so-called rights for 20 plus years. And I remember very clearly when I was on the air in Chicago in the 90s, that the National Education Association came out with this incredible video called It's Elementary. And it was basically a propaganda film. And it's probably hard for you to imagine how radical it was at the time. It was talk. It had a group of teachers sitting in a circle, and they were teaching the teachers how to teach the kids that homosexuality was good and natural, how to keep it from the parents. It was jaw-dropping because it was radical at the time. And it all came out of the nation's largest union, which is the National Education Association. Lori Higgins was close to that because she was in public school for a long time. And Lori, we found out, and I'll just finish this sentence, we found out that then the president of the National Education Association was himself a gay man. He came out after he left his position. I think he was there for more than 10 years. And the NEA lurched to the left on this. Teachers became radicalized, and I didn't see much resistance. Did you?
No, and that's what's really troubling in public schools. It's really interesting. In a lot of public schools, it's a relatively small group of activists who initiate all sorts of, you know, it can be, oh, we're going to, in the English department, we're going to teach, you know, Angels in America, or we're going to teach in theater, we're going to do Rent, or we're going to do Laramie Project. You know, these are all pro-homosexual plays. So you have this, or they might have professional development, which just has taken place in the school district I worked in for years. On the professional development, they were imposing all this liberal ideology, both on, you know, social justice, critical race theory, and things like that. And then you have the cowardice and silence of conservative teachers, which is really shameful. And I understand, you know, they'll say, oh, I'm afraid of some sort of professional or personal repercussions. Well, as believers, we should be welcoming the opportunity to suffer for Christ. And instead, we flee from even the most minor persecution, you know, having a colleague mad at us or saying something at a department meeting that people might, you know, look at us askance. They do nothing. And that's why this is, and of course, we know that education has been taken over decades ago by radical leftists. You know, I've talked to it was probably 8 years ago, a father called me from a farming community in southern or central Illinois telling me that his first grader had come home with a pro-homosexual picture book. And I said, is the teacher young? And he said, yes. And I said, you can no longer rely, even in conservative communities, that your teachers will reflect your values because they're coming out of department and schools of education, which are notoriously liberal, as is the discipline of library science. So they now control our schools. And then you have conservatives saying nothing. And that's why we get...
Lori, as I recall, and at the time we couldn't even say this blatantly, but I believe the principal of, correct me if I'm wrong, the principal of your school was a homosexual, we found out later, and then also more and more superintendents seem to be gay. I mean, it's like the gay movement, the LGBT pride movement, they have found themselves populating, I think, disproportionately public schools. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yes. And actually, it was our superintendent who was openly homosexual. They knew he was. He came from Ann Arbor, Michigan. His name was George Fornero. He's no longer there. He was sort of forced into retirement, not for that reason, and not for anything related to his homosexuality, which did affect his decision-making. But we have assistant principals and deans and all sorts of administrators in schools. And then you have certain departments which are particularly problematic. Theater and English departments are particularly problematic. In fact, I wrote about Lake Forest, which is another very affluent community on the North Shore. Some may know it because it's referred to in
Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Oh, I thought it was Ferris Bueller's.
They had just recently, just within the past couple months, they had a professional development day, and three administrators were holding a session to teach teachers how to step in and interrupt students if they hear them discussing heteronormativity, meaning promoting heteronormativity as good, which is the idea that the human species is binary, there's male and female, and that heterosexual sex is the norm, that teachers, was training teachers to step in and interrupt those conversations, not just in their classroom, anywhere they would hear them in the school.
You know, Lori, you just posted just a few days ago an article and a clip of an assistant principal of a STEM school in Pennsylvania, that's science, technology, whatever, and math, and his name is Zach Ruff. And I want to play just a little clip of this because the reason I want to play it now is because it will give people an idea of what our kids are up against. This is an assistant principal in a school, and there are two young people on the sidewalk, public sidewalk, holding up a poster. I don't think it's a graphic poster of abortion, is it, Lori?
I wasn't able to see it, but I read another Facebook post from a student who said it was graphic, which was interesting because he was trying to assert that a fetus is just a dime-sized collection of cells, and this girl said it was a bloody baby. So So apparently he doesn't recognize a baby when he sees one.
All right. Yeah, so they're standing out. I think the boy is 16, the girl's 19, and they're on the public sidewalk, and this assistant principal comes marching out of the building, and we're going to pick this up into the encounter and play it just to a certain point, because I want people to hear the hatred and also just the verbal violence, really, I would call it, against these kids. Here we go.
See, you wish to hide what's happening.
No, I wish to protect my students from unsightly things that they don't need to see.
Sir,
my students,
this is what
we
do
not have a single pregnancy in my school. I've been here for 5 years. Nobody's been pregnant. There not has been
not
a single abortion. And you want to call me a liar while you're standing out here harassing teenagers.
I'm not harassing
anyone. You can go
anyone?
Get a freaking lawyer.
These children are being murdered Murder. In our society.
They're not children. They're cells.
They're children.
Go home!
It's been proven.
They are cells. You're at a science-based school. Those are cells.
It's been proven by science.
No, it hasn't. No, it hasn't. Then take it out, and if it can live on its own, it's freaking awesome. Otherwise, shut up, leave me alone. I will call the police for you harassing me.
So we're not harassing anybody. We are saying that we live in a society that murders human beings.
Yeah, it's called the death penalty. Why don't you go protest that?
Sir, these are innocent human beings.
They're not innocent. They're cells.
They're not cells.
They're cells. They're the size of a dime. They're cells.
So you need to turn to Jesus Christ. He can set you free from your sin.
Listen here, son. All right? I'm as gay as the day is long and twice as sunny. I don't give a what you think Jesus tells me and what I should and should not be doing.
Yeah, that's just a portion of it. And Lori, I just played that because I wanted people, these are kids, and this is the vociferous attack they are under on these moral issues. Just your thoughts about that exchange.
Well, one, I think everyone needs to watch the first 8.5 minutes of that video to get a really clear picture of the arrogance and the nastiness of this man. This is supposedly one of the proponents of, you know, intellectual diversity and tolerance and how we should we should honor all voices. And he came out and he was swearing. And then later in there, he starts shouting, singing show tunes and prancing about to block people, high schoolers, from seeing these two posters. I'm not sure, it might have even been just one poster. And what is truly alarming about this is that he shares the views, and I know this for a fact, he shares the views of many progressive teachers in schools who, as I describe it, have the cunning not to let conservative parents or children who have conservative parents know what they really feel. I've heard this in English department meetings or in the office of teachers. I was a member of the English department. And so this, people might look at this and say he's particularly unhinged, but his views are shared by many, many liberal teachers. They're arrogant. They view themselves as change agents. They view it as their role to change the social, political, and moral views of other people's children using tax money. And you know, back to what I was saying about the cowardice of conservative teachers, they know that in schools. They see it. They don't even disagree. They just don't want to deal with it. And so, you know, when parents who are opposing co-ed restrooms, because that's what they are, they're co-ed restrooms, when you hear school board members say those who oppose those policies are ignorant, lacking in compassion, unloving, hateful people, remember, conservative children are hearing those messages. Conservative children who don't want to share restrooms or locker rooms with persons of the opposite sex hear those messages. So school administrators, teachers, school board members who say those things are also saying those things about conservative children.
You know, Lori, I think back to when my son was in Wheaton in high school and in middle school, and we were beginning to see this was not the issue yet, honestly. It wasn't a battle yet, but there were other issues. There was curriculum changes. There was a shutting out of parents. I remember my son was in wrestling, and he had what was a customary drug test. And when I called, I wanted to know the results. I didn't think my son was, he was just 14. I wanted to know. They did a test on him because he was going to be in the wrestling squad, and they refused to give me the results. There were things like this already happening where parents were shut out from knowledge. And I remember causing a little trouble as his mother. And I remember, I'm sure he would wish maybe sometimes he had a different mother. I'm confident of that. But you know, Lori, I guess I always felt and still do feel that if we example for our kids that nothing is worth fighting for, standing up for truth and righteousness is not worth the bother, then we are speaking volumes. Our lives are shouting to them that being committed to Jesus and to truth doesn't really mean anything if it costs us anything. And so
you just said is so important, because these issues were not in schools for my first two children. They started with my third, and then they were really big time with my fourth. And so I was addressing them. I would go to the administration. I would speak at a school board meeting. It was terrifying for me. I didn't like it, but I did it anyway. And it was. And I had colleagues who had been my friends who wouldn't sit in a room with me, who wouldn't say hello to me if I were the only person in the hall and I said hello first. It was awful. And my kids later, all four of them, in separate occasions, have said to me how much they admired my courage. And yep. I didn't even know they were watching.
Yes, Lori. We're running out of time. You and I have to talk more often. My exact experience, thank God for that. And we need to stand strong. Lori Higgins of the Illinois Family Institute, her articles will be on our Facebook page. Thank you for listening.